Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening. Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wiss number 70. It's me coming out of College Station, Texas, the motherland. We've also got Mikey from Chicagoland.
Hey, how's it going?
And we got Dave from Los Angeles.
Hello.
That's all we get, huh? All right, that'll work. No. Let's get the vegetables out of the way before we get to our zert. Our sponsor today is again Sonar.software. Hit them at Sonar.software. They are a scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. I know a lot of customers that have been using them. I've had fairly decent success with it so far. Working on doing the DHCP batcher for a client not too long ago. Wasn't too bad. It kind of aggregates all the DHCP requests into one and shoots it up. It's a neat system. Go and check them out. All right, you guys ready to jump in?
I'm ready.
Both feet. All right, so first little thing that popped into my head for the notes was the MikroTik LHG60. That's the long haul guy, right? It's kind of got the dome on the back. So it's the 60 gigahertz radio that can go, they're saying, around a mile, somewhere in that neighborhood. And distributors are saying they should have it on the 15th of this month. So that's next week, like middle of next week. And Miller actually had a video of one. So I guess he's already got a pair, right, Mikey?
He dropped it in our Slack, showing, it's basically highlighting the alignment LEDs. It's got four LEDs. I think they can be used for, like, because I think on either side of the LED, can't see my hands, either side of the LED, they got labels. One of them has your standard, low to high signal. And the other one has arrows up, down, left, right. And it will flash the light of the, arrow, indicating if you need to tilt your LHG60 up, down, left, right. Because it's beamforming, for send and receive, it can tell, if it's using elements way off to the side, you need to turn your antenna that way to put the, to maximize the use of the, of the dish.
So it's basically a visual alignment built right into it via the LEDs.
Yeah. I have no idea how.
I'm assuming he was going to say he doesn't know how well it works, but Miller apparently was having
an LH.
Nah, he'll pop out and pop back in. So from what I understand, they're working pretty good. I'm interested in seeing a pair. Actually, I'm going to put some on order as soon as they come in. Honestly, I live really close to ISP Supply, so I'll just drive over there and pick up a pair whenever they come in. I think they're going to be like, what, $300 or something for a pair? Somewhere in the neighborhood?
Man. Dude, he's gone. He's out. He's frozen.
He's frozen.
He's frozen. And he has a funny expression on his face.
Yeah, so we were just talking about robots. There you go. He locked up.
He's talking about DDoS.
He forgot to stop his torrents. But he's got to catch up on his Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
He lives on a farm, though. Come on. How good can internet be on a farm?
My problem is that one of my links has pretty bad thermal fade, and every now and then it just goes in the tank. So I had to adjust OSPF to move me the other way around.
You smart little bastard. A pig didn't chew through a wire somewhere?
No.
For those of you who don't know, Mike has a pig farm, or I don't know, you got a lot of pigs on your farm. Oh, McDonald's! Yeah,
it would be creepy if I had lots of pigs and didn't have a pig farm. That'd be
That's a whole different show.
There'd be some questions that need answers.
I'd end up on CSI or Criminal Minds or something like that.
All right, well, finish off your LHG thought.
Yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah. I don't know what the precision is on that. If you can use those solely, or if you still have to, you know, use a phone or something to actually look at the signal strength. But you know, that, I mean, that sounds incredibly useful. You know, it, you know, it, you're being told by the radio which way you have to turn it to, you know, maximize your signal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as sensitive as these things are going to be at that kind of a distance, it seems like you can just rough it in with the LEDs probably, and then dial it in by looking at the interface, which is going to save you a lot of trouble, a lot of time probably.
It, and so it's going to have a similar gain to the IgniteNet big antenna. So there's going to be kind of some trade-offs between, you know, which one is better. You know, LHD60 has, you know, that, you know, method to help you, you know, align it with the LEDs, but it has no SFP. It has no 5 gig backup. IgniteNet has, you know, both of those available. Costs a lot more, but, you know, 5 gig backup could be invaluable for your deployment depending on how far you're going.
What are these things, like 250, 300 a pair?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So. And the IgniteNet, I think, are 5 each.
Hey, can I just ask, where do you find information on this? Because I'm on the Microtech website on microtech.com/products, and I don't see any LHG that's 60 gigahertz. You guys want to help us out here?
They announced them at the shows and in their newsletters. They don't normally put them on the website until they're, like, you know, in containers on the way.
Well, if they're going to be available on the 15th, they better damn well be on the way.
You would think so.
These laptops.
Maybe they're getting air freighted in. I know lots of distributors are starting to, you know, air freight in the popular stuff.
Oh yeah, all right.
You know, charge more for it because it costs a lot more to, you know, air freight than to, you know, send it by a boat. But you know, hey, something.
And if we're done something with the LHG thing, I just want to inject something that I've heard. Maybe you guys can verify this, but a friend of mine, a really great guy, Nick Arellano, very smart dude. He got, like, all the certifications in, like, 3 days. No, I'm just kidding. He got them in, like, a week, all of them. He was learning from Rick Frey. So he went out there, and he pretty much has everything except for trainer. He even got the INE. Anyway, smart guy. So he runs a WISP, and you guys know that I don't run a WISP, so I'm just going to tell you what he said, and you just tell me what your thoughts are. He said that he gets much better results with Microtech wireless point-to-point stuff than with Ubiquiti, and that was kind of a shock to me because as far as I've been hearing is that everybody in the industry, they always say Ubiquiti in the air, Microtech on the ground, and that's kind of the motto they stuck with. Now, me... I like the Microtech interface because it's very behind the scenes, very configurable. You can customize it any which way you want. Sometimes I'll log into a Microtech and I'll see a config and I'll be like, oh, that's this guy, because I know his configs and how he does things. And well, that's how flexible it is. So he says he gets really, really good results with Nstream protocol, which is Microtech proprietary, and he gets better throughput, less delay. With Nstream. Have you guys experienced that?
So are you saying backhauls or to customers?
I never asked him. But
he's in our Slack. I'll just ask him.
Yeah. Yeah, just ask him. He didn't specify that. But he said Nstream is actually meant for long distance point to point shots or point to multi point. Whereas 802.11.3 is not really meant for those long distance hauls.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. I don't want to. Here's the trick: if you, no matter what you say in this, you're gonna offend somebody that's listening. So, if it works for you, that's great. I'll put that. I'll preface it with that. Having said that, I would think on point-to-point links, I would say the air fiber stuff is probably gonna edge out Microtech on just about anything they're gonna do, whether it be the air fiber 24s or even the air fiber 5s.
Yeah, because of that Prism chip, right? They that Prism chip does something to the Wi-Fi transmission. I don't know.
Well, the Prism is on their AC products. The air fibers are their, you know, homegrown stuff. No 802.11 at all. So
oh,
they
it's
are
not at all.
not at all. It's you know, totally homegrown. So it is a cut above product. It does cost more.
Yeah,
you
know, it's more expensive.
You know, like the yo, if ever 5X is a $400 or $500 radio for doing point to point, but you know, but it's better than the you know A211, you know, the most A211 based stuff.
I think we need to have Nick guest appear on the show to discuss this topic because, I mean, the kid is smart as hell. Sometimes he talks and I really feel like a first grader. Shut up, Giannis. Seriously, I think it might be a good idea because he really is a diehard Microtech wireless guy, like totally diehard. And
no, I mean, I think Thomas Kernack would say the same thing. He really likes using Microtech wireless stuff. I use it for a few customers in kind of some small downtown areas, and it works well. You know, it works consistently. It seems like most operators are going to be ubiquity though to the customer. Yeah. I mean,
that's definitely what it seems the norm is in the industry.
You know, I would say that Microtech was a lot stronger in the wireless space a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But they seem to, I don't want to say abandoned, but they seem to have not really done much with, they made NV2 because NV, InStream originally wasn't, people were running into problems. But then they always seem to fix one thing or another at some point in the future. So like NV2, not that long ago, within the past 6 months, they said that, NV2 performance improvements is like what the, changelog said. And it was something like on multipoint, they got like a 40%, throughput increase. And like, that's substantial. That's huge. In the multi-point space, they're missing out on lots of stuff people have now, GPS sync and, which they started playing with sync and, but they're missing out on a bunch of other things that people have started to use and kind of rely on. And so I thought they were kind of, down and out, but then, come along, they have that, they're testing some sort of internal sync thing. NV2 got 40% more throughput. So
I may have been misquoting. It could have been NV2 or NStream. I don't exactly remember. Oh, but when he talks, I zone out because he gets deep, man. He gets real deep. So well, maybe we'll just ask him on the show. You can find him on Slack or something because yeah, he seems to really, really prefer it over Ubiquiti, and this kid is no dope.
Yeah, I think I've read some people doing some head-to-head tests of the new NV2 stuff, and they're saying it's just they're not getting the throughput they would need to be able to compete with the Ubiquiti endpoints. I think that was the last thing I read, that it's just they can't push as much through, and also the Ubiquiti stuff's cheap. It's really cheap. Although, I mean, having said that,
Ubiquiti's cheap as Microtech, come on.
Well, I mean, Ubiquiti stuff's pretty inexpensive.
I left Microtech wireless because this was a long time ago, when AirMax first came out and Ubiquiti had the NanoBridge 25, and with as difficult as the NanoBridge was to assemble, Microtech had zero product that was close to that space in terms of RF performance. They had, little SXTs with 19 dB antennas and stuff. And oof. I'm like, I need a big antenna. And
yeah, I like them big.
And go big or go home with antennas. And it took them a very, very long time to come out with an assembled product. I used to, do all that. You buy the router board, you buy the mini PCI, you buy the pigtail, you buy a case to put it in.
Get like a Rutina. I remember those days. It was a pain in the ass. Yeah.
Of course, there's people that will sell you an assembled Rutina, but I'm like, why would I pay you $20 to assemble it when, I could pay anybody $20 to assemble it.
So the big difference is Ubiquiti. You get, on a more basic level, on a hardware level, Ubiquiti would would give you a finished product. Here, go stick this on a pole, go put it on a tower. Whereas MikroTik, you kind of had to piecemeal together.
Sure, yeah, but you know that was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, MikroTik does MikroTik even have dishes aside from their LHG5 stuff? I mean, I'm talking like backhaul stuff, not you know.
Yeah, they have what, like the DynaDish, I think, and
yeah, that.
I mean, they've got some other stuff.
But nothing as big as like a Ubiquiti dish, like let's say the 600 millimeter dish that Ubiquiti has. They don't have anything that big, do they?
Well, I mean, they've got radios you could screw into those. So
they do have a 30 dB dish. With a
I see a 27, the LHG XL.
Scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page.
Bottom. Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. Yes. Oh and, shit.
You know, and they've got radomes for them, and they have the little, shields, like the RFMR guys are doing.
Yeah. So how come people aren't using more of these? I know you said you jumped off it.
Actually, I've largely, half my network is Ubiquiti, half my network is EPMP because Ubiquiti was stagnating. You know, it was always whoever rises to the top stagnates and then someone else comes in and takes away. So EPMP came in with having GPS sync, and that was functional GPS sync that did what you expected, and so they I rebuilt a bunch of my network with that because I absolutely needed the frequency reuse, but now Ubiquiti has it, has GPS sync working, and so I'm just gonna upgrade my Ubiquiti side with Ubiquiti and upgrade my Cambium side with Cambium, and that way I can complain to both vendors.
Well, I mean, Ubiquiti's starting to come out with kind of a premium wireless product now. I can't remember what's that even called, Mike.
LTU is kind of their technology thing. Long-term Ubiquiti, I think, is what it stands for, kind of a play on LTE.
Yeah,
but they're basically kind of, going the, Cambium 450 route where they make a multi-point platform with, their own technology. That's what the AF5X HD is based on, for a point-to-point. I know some, WISPs in the, inner circle are, beta testing the LTU multi-point, but I'm not sure when it's gonna.
But I think in earlier, Mike, you said that some of the vendors had stagnated. I think maybe they're not keeping pace with what we want here in the U.S. But you got to remember that we're not their primary target. I mean, think about all those emerging markets that are coming out where 2 megs or 1 meg is like a lot of bandwidth to be delivered to a customer.
The Congo, come on.
I mean, Africa, Mexico, South America, all those markets, that's a decent amount of bandwidth you're actually shipping out. So
a couple of weeks ago I started a thread on Nanog, basically complaining about, Google pushing, HTTPS everywhere. Which has kind of caught on to lots of people, encrypt all of the things. Including things that have no business being encrypted.
Like websites, what do you mean?
my website, with my company's website with my marketing information.
Yeah.
It's like, I have to have it available via SSL so that Google doesn't, rank me poorly on search results.
There's a good reason for that. Come on. How many websites get hacked and then you start getting spammed the shit out of from all these websites? I can't
that has
even
nothing
tell
to do
you
with
how
the
many
hacking,
hacked.
Though.
Yeah.
They'll still hack the server. It's just all it's doing is it's ensuring that somebody in the middle doesn't steal my marketing information. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I mean, the guys in those emerging markets where they've got a 10 meg pipe that they're trying to feed everybody to, those are the guys that are using caching boxes,
Sure.
I mean, you got to wonder who still uses HTTP caching. It's actually those guys. And once you start encrypting all of that stuff, the usefulness of those things kind of goes away.
I started that thread because the guy was saying, hey, I'm getting a 1 meg connection to the internet to provide service to my village. you know, what can I do to, you know, make the most of this? And, you know, everyone's all just riding him because, you know, one meg's not enough for one person. You know, half the people are saying, and I'm like, but look, here he said that right now they get 40 kilobits. Like, they're getting dial up. So
damn,
anything you do is going to be better.
Yeah.
But so now this guy, you know, before we started encrypting everything, you know, you could get, you know, 75% of your traffic could come from your, you know, squid box.
Right.
And it still can if you, you know, because they have different methods for, you know, interrupting the SSL. You know, you have to install, you know, your root certificate into your clients so that, you know, you won't get, you know, all the cert errors. But, you know, Google will still, you know, Google and Smellers that use, what is it, HSTS, where the browser knows what the cert's supposed to be, you know, those will still flag on a cache like that. But, you know, someone like that has a 1 meg pipe to the world, you know, caching is everything. And we've kind of gotten off track. Where did we start with this? Oh, yeah.
Emerging markets.
So, you know, they'll sell a lot of volume there, and that volume has different, you know, price sensitivities, feature requirements than people here. But on the flip side, you know, I've always argued, you know, some of the features they'll need down there anyway for, you know, scalability of the system, regardless of how many bits are going through. You know, frequency reuse, things like that. But then, you know, some of the more premium features, you know, we pay a crap load for those. You know, they're making a ton of money on the, you know, Microchip on the CCRs as opposed to the, you know, 450s. I mean, they cost 20 times as much. You know, they're selling a few, I'm sure, to, you know, the emerging markets, but, you know, there's not the profit margin in those guys either.
It seems like most of the guys I work with in the emerging markets are either using the really low scale router boards, or they're going x86 with just really old machines. You know, just something that you probably threw away 10 years ago. They're loading router OS.
Not something I threw away 10 years ago, I'll tell you that. Somebody else threw away and I didn't get it.
I used to hoard, man. I purge now. I just blah blah, take it all, get rid of it.
You know, I think we've talked about that a little bit.
By the way, I don't know. Everywhere I hear, like, my friend just came back from China and Japan, and like you said, Mike, you said that, you know, 1 meg is a lot in a lot of places. Well, yeah, when you live in a bush, but like, I think America is far behind in the bandwidth, because in Japan they're given, like, in Canada, a friend of mine in Canada has a gigabit connection from his ISP, and he does periodic speed tests because he's one of these weirdos that always wants to make sure he's getting all the bandwidth. So he gets like 900 megs, whatever. And then he calls me, how come I'm getting 900 megs? But who cares? The point is, I think America's really, really far behind on how much bandwidth they deliver to their
end
users.
That race to me is pointless because
I agree, but we're still behind.
No. My argument to you is, look at the geographic size of Japan and compare and contrast that to the United States, right?
Oh, bullshit. Come on.
How much easier is it to put fiber infrastructure in a country the size of, like, New York State or something?
Everything here is fiber. I have fiber to my house and I got the cheapest package.
Well, then why are you complaining? Why are you complaining?
I'm not complaining. I just like to be that dick that disagrees with everyone. So, you know.
Well, I think in the major metropolitan areas, it absolutely makes sense. But out on Mike's hog farm, I don't think you can, you know, anticipate somebody getting. I mean, just think about it. It makes sense.
Just dissed your farm.
If you're gonna go every 3/4 of a mile and then have a customer, you're doing it wrong with your fiber infrastructure, right? If you're in a densely populated urban area and you can go 500 feet. And you're connecting a customer. That makes a lot more sense.
which is kind of backwards, because it's like most of the fiber to the home connections, maybe not the past 2 or 3 years, but say the 10 years before that, most of the fiber connections were in the middle of nowhere because it was those rural phone companies getting the USF dollars, like, you know, on your phone bill, you know, there's the, you know, $4 USF, you know, some of these guys are getting, you know, $10,000 per customer per year. So they're putting fiber to everything to deliver phone service, 'cause that's all they're allowed to deliver. Yeah. Well, you know, billed for, but, yeah, but no, I mean, you know, fiber is catching up here, but it's one of those things that, you know, as long as you can get 20 or 50 megs to your house, you know, you probably don't need any more.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I totally agree.
You know, I would take 50 megs to my house from an ISP that has, you know, on-net DNS recursive servers, that is on an internet exchange, you know, that has some substantial size to it. I don't care if it's mine, just somebody's. Because, you know, that over, say, an AT&T, you know, 1 gig fiber. Because AT&T's going to have congestion. AT&T's going to have, you know, crappy DNS servers. You know, give me the 50 meg that's 50 megs of quality over a gig of junk.
You know, I think I would be perfectly happy with 20 megs to my house. I have significantly more than that. But I have the base package, which I think here is 300 megs or something like that. And
holy shit.
And I am perfectly adequate. You know what I mean? Like, having said that, I do also work for a data center. So, I mean, I've got a gig at my desk. So it's like, what do I need to do at home? But I don't really, when I was a kid, I used to download a lot of stuff like that. Right. But now that I've become a man, I've put away childish things. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. Right. So I don't need that stuff anymore. All I need now is just to stream my stuff.
You were talking about porn, weren't you? Childish stuff when you were a kid. That's how I learned about computers.
I used to I would see 3D Studio Max. Yeah, I need that. No, I don't need that, but I would download that because the thing was there. You know, I just everything you could see.
I'm going to use this. And I never used it. I never even installed it.
Never even installed it.
I just downloaded it because I was going to.
Because I could. Yeah.
And all my customers that I monitor, because I monitor their firewalls, their internet. And actually, I just had Nick set up a NetXMS server for me and Grafana, and it works beautifully because I was using Zabbix. Regardless, I'd see how much customers would ask me, oh, you know, we can upgrade to 300 megs for an extra $100. And I'm like, well, let's look at your graphs. And you're not even going over 80. Like, you have one peak of 80 megabits for a minute a week ago. And I'm like, you can buy it, but you're not going to use it. So yeah, I hear you on that.
You'll see no benefit from it.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about, you were talking about government money. I just going through the process of signing up for USAC, the Universal Service Administrative Company. Have you guys ever messed with that?
Oh yeah.
USAC. Yeah. That sounds like a porn site.
So it's basically what it is anybody, I guess, that has the proper requirements, like their rural health care. I think there's emergency services. There's some other ones like that. They can file with a USAC company. And so it's an FCC program. So I guess on people's telecom bills, there's an extra little tax and that goes into this USAC fund. So in essence, they can make a claim against USAC and the government will pay 65% of their telecom bill. Boop, boop. And so all you have to do is file for a form 498 number. It's actually pretty straightforward. You just have to have a DUNS number. You have to have a CORS number from the FCC.
Yep. And you get a SPIN, service provider identification number.
They don't do SPINs anymore. They actually deprecated those.
Oh, really?
Now they're calling it a 498 number. Whatever. Oh. It's the same thing. It's just not a SPIN anymore. But yeah, so once they send you the check for the 35% they owe, and they file it with the USAC, then you just hit a little check mark that says, yeah, they've done the thing, and then a check comes to you. So if you guys haven't done it, it doesn't cost you anything. It gets you on the list, and you can it can help you court some other providers out there, mostly, you know, kind of government stuff. But, you know what I mean? If it doesn't cost you anything, every little bit helps, right?
Now, are you talking about this is only for ISPs or is this for just anyone?
Service or providers WISP are on there for sure. It's mostly telecom stuff. Yeah, so a WISP could do it. Yeah, and you could help provide these services.
Wow. So the government can subsidize up to 65% of your bandwidth costs?
Yeah.
If you're qualified.
I don't know. Maybe even more. I don't know.
Well, they've got different programs. They have, like, a schools and libraries fund, mm-hmm. a rural healthcare fund. Like, a schools and libraries fund, it's based on, so, like, they'll pay up to 90% based on the, the percentage of children in your school that qualify for, like, the free lunch program, which it seems odd because, like, I know some, like, extremely wealthy towns around here that somehow still manage to get, like, 75% covered. I'm like, these people live in million-dollar homes. How is anybody in this district getting, the free lunch? But
that's why they do busing.
So then there's a bidding process, and the school picks who they want their internet from, and then you send them a bill, the school pays it, and then I think the feds then, or well, USAC, then sends the school a check for, 3/4 or 90% or half or however they qualify, for that bill. And, similar for rural healthcare. And then there's, high cost and low income programs?
High cost
is for like Alaska and Montana and stuff. Low income, it's self-explanatory. I've done work on that from both sides, both the side of contributing money to the fund, as a telco, and, getting money back out of it. Trying. Anyway, I didn't actually win any of it, but
every little bit helps. Yeah. Just get in there and also you could put that in your marketing, right? That's one more thing to help you get your foot in the door with some of these peeps. So why not? So let's see what else we had on the list. You had UBNT starts looking into Air Max MPLS issues.
And why this is so the issue is that apparently Air Max, Air Max will it does some inspection of packets to determine if they're voice, video, things like that, and will apply some auto QoS to it. This has always been a thing. Except it apparently deprioritizes MPLS packets.
Whoa, that's a big fuck up on their part.
So any MPLS packet, even if it's a voice call inside an MPLS packet, right, it gets dumped to the bottom of the priority list.
Wow.
So that's a problem worth looking into. Except the thread was started in 2014, and somebody just started looking into it like Thursday.
Oh, snap.
It's like 4 or 5 pages in the thread, and somebody from Ubiquiti was like, "Hey, just started looking into this. Thanks." And the guy's like, "It's great. That employee that started this thread, he doesn't work for me anymore. That was 4 years ago. I would appreciate this getting done, though." It's like, yep. Well, we've confirmed that this is a problem. We're looking into a fix. It's like, within 2 or 3 days of them actually looking into it, they figured out, yes, this is a problem. 4 years after the threat was
better late than never.
Better late than never. Everybody has that. It's just, this time it's Ubiquiti that's wearing the, long-time feature request. Oh, hey, wait a minute. What's this going?
Not a feature request. That's a bug fix.
Let's
call it what it is. I mean, God, but can't you configure anything on a Ubiquiti that's not automatic? Like, if I want to prioritize VoIP over, stupid HTTP browsing, can't I choose that or no?
So like you can do stuff with I believe it looks at DSCP values and a few other things on that. But apparently, if it's in an MPLS packet or frame, it dumps it to the bottom.
Wow. So could you change your DSCP value on a MPLS packet or frame?
You could, I suppose.
So why not do that?
But then everything is it's like, so you're taking it from everything being prioritized or deprioritized to everything prioritized. Like,
Oh, so you're only pumping out it. So your network is completely MPLS.
Yeah, so everything will be MPLS.
Yeah. All right, then that's kind of pointless. Well, you know what? That's kind of... Wait, but you just said it tries to figure out if it's VoIP, if it's like video or something, and...
Yeah, but it looks at, it sees an MPLS frame, and the MPLS frame is not voice, it's not video.
Got it.
Like, it doesn't open up the envelope to see what's inside of it.
Okay, so it's just reading like layer two stuff.
So it sounds like if you're doing MPLS all the way, then it just eliminates that prioritization. So everything is just created, or just everything is treated equal. So you just lose the advantage of that. There doesn't really seem to be a quote unquote disadvantage.
Like, sounds like it comes negatively into impacting. Issue for like if you're doing like
if you're oversaturated.
You're just not getting benefits.
It sounds like some people's networks are kind of a mix of things. So then that's an issue.
Yeah. That could be problematic.
Prioritization is only gonna happen when you've maxed out your link. So I guess this will only apply to people who have like completely saturated links. So let me ask you, can MikroTik kind of be the workaround for that? Now, I'm not talking about on the wireless side, but I'm talking about on the routing side, where they can change DSCP values before the actual packets leave the router. What do you think?
You can mark DSCP code points and stuff like that as things exit the router. But then again... If you're doing routing on the either end of those things, it could absolutely do that. But
so like maybe like on the routers that are adding and dropping the MPLS labels, they attach an appropriate DCP value from the beginning.
Before it like, makes it to the radio. Assuming you're using a MikroTik to do the MPLS.
Sure. It seems like it could be a possible thing. I will gladly yield to somebody smarter than me to. Changing the DSCP value of an MPLS packet based upon what you're, what it's going, what's going into it.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not smart enough in that way.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if. If you set the DSCP value and it goes through a Ubiquiti radio, does that remain intact when it exits the radio as well?
It should.
Does that stay on the frame, or does it strip it?
It's just acting as a switch at that point. Just the delivery is over wireless. So it's layer two stuff, right? So it should hold it. You're not scrubbing the frames. So some ISPs do that, but...
Yeah, I know like in most... I believe on most like Cisco switches, the default is to set the DSCP value to default as it enters. Or maybe that's just what I put on all my switches, that it resets all that stuff to default every time it enters a switch port to keep end users from elevating their traffic and then pumping it in.
So is it Cisco sucks or Greg sucks? Which one is that?
Oh, Greg trusts nobody. That's the problem.
Well, you can't let customers specify their own DSCP values going through your network. That's why I said some ISPs will scrub packets and frames and stuff.
I always set my stuff to to the highest priority that I can think of, just to see if it'll work or not.
I do that with VoIP. Anytime I set up somebody's router, I'm like, VoIP gets highest priority, then TCP acts, and then whatever other bullshit I have in there. Yeah. So cool, but let's move on because I think we're starting to lose energy on this topic.
Yeah. What's your All right, so what's the rant about on Project Fi here, Mikey?
Uh-oh.
Well, see, so I have had Sprint for a very long time, and I had the Sprint Google Voice integration, which allowed me to use, like, Google Hangouts for all my messaging and phone calls and stuff. Well, Sprint's upgrading something in their back end, I assume, towards supporting Volte and some other things like that. But they're losing the support for Google Voice. They actually got shut off on the 1st. And I knew it was going to happen. I just didn't prepare for it to look into how to work around that. Because I rarely look at my phone itself. You know, if it rings, it rings, whatever. I look to see on on my computer, down in the corner of the screen, who's it say is calling me? or who is texting me, and I respond on the keyboard because it's so much faster to alt tab, type something, move on, than to grab my phone and type on it. And then you know, voicemail transcription and, you know, forwarding voicemails to email and just all kinds of stuff.
Wait, can we just back up and just say that Project Fi, Google's cell phone service, is only available on Androids? That's the last time I used it. Is that still correct?
Well, yes. I mean, okay. Why would you have not?
I don't know. I'm just let's not get into that. I agree with you, but that's another conversation for another time.
It's only available on certain Androids. Like, there's only like maybe 10 models you can use it on because what it does is is, you know, Google's phone service, you know, it'll use Wi-Fi, it'll use this, it'll use that. But then they use, for their cellular network, they use Sprint, T-Mobile, and U.S. Cellular. All three are native networks, which is not a common thing. You know, most people, it's you have Sprint or T-Mobile or AT&T. You know, you don't have all of them. And so most phones don't have the capability of, you know, handling, you know, switching to other carriers during a call or during a data session.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's during a call, but I know for a fact that that does use multiple carriers. I thought AT&T was one of them. But I used Project Fi way back when it started on my Nexus 6. It wasn't even a 6P. It was a Nexus 6. It was the
Nexus
size.
Nexus 6 is the best Nexus or Pixel I've ever made.
It's not a Pixel. It's a Nexus.
It's better than the Pixel phones. My Nexus 6 is better than the Pixel phones.
That's not what I found, but anyway, that's a different conversation. It was as big as a VCR. Like, every time you took a call, you had to put this big freaking pad up to your face.
Yep, I love it. It would be great.
Cool, but what I found, I was on Project Fi for about 2 months, and I had to get rid of it because, and I'm in L.A., you know, and not like in the mountains of L.A. I am in, like, Long Beach, you know, where it's pretty damn populated here. So I can't imagine they had a problem with coverage or with what's the other one? Not usage, but when you
oversaturation
capacity. Yes, capacity. And dude, it was just awful. Every time when I lived in my condo, every time I went from my bedroom to the front of my house, like clockwork, I drop a call. And that was only with Project Fi. And when I'm driving, I would constantly drop calls. So I got rid of them.
Was it using – so whose network was it using at those times?
I couldn't tell. It didn't say anything on
sure
the
–
Sure it does. No,
you just got to get the right
phone.
App. You just got to know what you're doing, buddy.
I guess I didn't know. I just want to make the call, and I want to make the – I just want the call to work, damn it.
I'm just egging, yeah. Yeah, it's not – they've got apps out there where you know, I've got mapping programs I've used forever that will tell you, you know, whose tower you're on, which tower, you know, which exact tower, signal strength, all that. But then for Fi, there's programs. So on Fi, they have dialer codes you can get from, you know, Google support. I think it's on their website probably.
Where you can force it
to one carrier or another, you know, because it'll pick what it thinks is best.
Yeah.
But you can force it to Sprint, force it to T-Mobile, force it to U.S. Cellular.
Well, keep
for
in mind,
2 hours at a time. Once two hours is up, it takes over.
I get it. I was using this a long time ago. It had to have been about 2 years ago. So they were still kind of in their infancy. I'm sure it's gotten better. Because when I would call Google support, they never told me about these codes that you could dial. So I guess that's something new and people were bitching about.
So I just switched, like, today is my first day on Fi.
Oh, good luck, buddy.
I mean, you know, I've already used all the same texting and messaging infrastructure.
Yeah, wait till you're actually moving at more than 3 miles an hour.
I've moved already today.
Yeah. All right, cool, man. Hey, if it works, that's great. I'm glad they fixed their problems because I had a very bad experience with them. I was still doing it when it was like in their infancy of the Project Fi.
I also try to avoid phone calls at all costs. So
I have a cell phone, so I don't have to use it.
If I didn't have a voice on my phone, I would probably be happy with that. just give me a give me a tablet that, you know, I can run a voice program in if I need to.
I agree with you, man. I don't like speaking to people. I don't even like speaking to you right now.
Yeah. Oh, can't wait to hang up. I'm counting down the minutes. I'm watching the clock. I hate talking on the phone. For me, it's a means to an end. It's the quickest form of communication sometimes. So I like it for that. Other than that, I would much rather just talk to you face to face. That's sort of my, I guess this is a decent concession for me. Is I can actually see your face. I guess that makes it a little better.
You're it's way a concession too tall. Every it's time I speak to you, I'm looking up. It's awful.
I can pick you up and hold you like a baby.
See your face.
Cool. All right, so let's move on. Mike was asking about fiber tools. What do you find essential? We're not talking about like termination stuff. I guess just kind of accessories. And I'll go first. I like the clicky cleaners. They look like sort of like pins, and you just put it on and you click. It's got kind of, it's almost like a reel of dental floss built in. And every time you click, it just slides the floss across. So it helps clean your optics, helps clean your fiber ends. Those are really nice. A VFL, visual fault locator. It's basically just a laser that shines through, and you can, if you're trying to figure out, you know, if you're looking at a bulkhead and it's got 96 count in there and you're not 100% sure which fiber is which, you put the VFL on the other end and it shines the light through. It makes it really easy.
Holy shit. That sounds great.
What else do we like? The power meters. We use the Owl brand fiber light source and Ooh. Power meters.
Ooh.
Owl, O-W-L. Ooh. Oh, you're such a dick. Those are cheap and effective. I did that to my wife the other day. She goes, "That building looks like an owl." And I go, "Who?" She goes, "That building." And I go, "Who?" It was great. What else? I rigged up this thing that we end up using a whole lot. It's a media converter, but it's basically it's more like a media transitioner sort of thing. So on one side, it's got multi-mode. It's like got an SC multi-mode connection. On the other side, it's got another SC single mode. So it basically converts single mode to multi-mode, right, in an active device. And so it runs off of 12 volts. So I just have some battery that I cobble together and put it in there with a switch. And so what we do is if we want to test a fiber run, we'll plug it into the receive side. And then at the far side, we'll loop it. And if it links up, you know it's going to pass traffic. And you could test single mode or multi-mode with it. So you can really quickly tell without having to do an OTDR or a light meter or all that crap. I mean, you can do that, and those are good tools. Or you can just really quickly plug this thing in, and does it loop? Yeah, okay, it's going to work. And it's portable. I guess you could use like a MikroTik with an SFP and do the same thing. So it's kind of a poor man's meter. Will it work? If you can loop it and it's going to go all the way through that fiber and all the way back and it works, you got to be, pretty confident that your run is going to function. I would say that's my essential fiber tools. What have you found so far, Mikey?
Well, I'm the one that asked because I had to place an order. So I was seeing what people had to use. So far, it was, I really didn't have any fiber tools, but I ordered quite an array of things. I'm actually going to attach the picture of the order to order that I've received so far anyway to that post. But I ordered a VFL, I ordered a power meter and adapters to go down to LC. You know, I ordered one of those clicky cleaners. I ordered why is this on here twice? I ordered some loopback adapters. I ordered looking at what I have here. Only half the orders made it, and I think the other half has to come from China or something. I ordered a whole bunch of stuff. I ordered like $400 worth of like different testers and stuff, which at Fiber Store, $400 is a lot.
Yeah, it gets you a lot of stuff. So I know the cooking cleaners, we have a university here, and every single connection they ever make, they click, 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 and clean it. But honestly, if you're not going a really long distance, it doesn't usually matter. I know people are probably going to yell at me about that. And honestly, the dust caps doesn't mean the fiber's clean. It just keeps the end from getting scratched, right? The dust caps sit in a bin that collects dust. So whenever you get a fiber patch cord, it's not clean when it comes out of the bag. I mean, technically the end is going to still be a little dirty. But odds are it's going to pass traffic. And you've probably done the same thing as me where you go, hah, hah, and then you wipe it on your shirt. And I know you're not supposed to do that either. But I tell you what, it works a lot of times. So I kind of do that in a pinch. So don't shoot me. It works. I'm not doing long haul fiber runs into these things. So
that, on the list of things you're not supposed to do. I also shared a picture, that I saw somewhere, on our Facebook page, caution, do not stare into fiber with remaining eye.
Remaining eye, oh that's nice.
So you know, once you've lost your one eye from looking into the fiber, do not use the other one to look into the fiber, because so, you lose that one too.
I remember having a conversation with a guy who used to run and terminate fiber for a living, and he was with an old timer, and he had to redo I think 3 or 4 of his ends, and the old timer never had to redo his ends. Like, for whatever reason, they just always worked. And so he was asking the old timers, like, man, how is it yours always test clean? He goes, this is what you do. He took the fiber in, he rubs it on the side of his nose, and he sticks it in there.
Wow.
In the tester.
He's it's like, oily?
Yeah. He's like, that little bit of oil, for whatever reason, always makes it test clean. So, and I'm
you
assuming
know why it
once
probably
he
fills in any micro scratches.
So,
you know?
I'm just saying, the guys running the fiber might have some trips and some tips and tricks that they use to get their reports to come up clean. So it may behoove you to actually clean your ends in there. Because I mean, in the long term, maybe that works great, but then when that oil dries up or whatever, you know, it's going to just go back
someone
to
else's problem.
Trash. Yeah. Right. Not my problem anymore. So
it does. So you're saying, Brothers Wisp, tip of the week, always clean your end
with your nose.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah, it wouldn't be a terrible idea. I thought that was pretty clever. That's like, you know, when you see old telco guys and they, I've seen them take Cat 5 and tie a knot in it and then run it out the wall. You know, that way you can't pull it through, and you know, they'll staple it to the wall, or they'll strip all the jacket off and straighten the wires and pull that through the wall. And just you never
sounds
quite
like
know.
Sounds like Verizon guys.
Yeah,
because those
yeah.
guys don't give a damn.
No, they don't.
They
care.
Just want to go in there, finish their job any which way they need to, and then after that day, it's someone else's problem.
We do. So, like at the data center, we have, and I probably shouldn't say this, but we've got a little locked room where the POTS lines comes in, and it looks like holy hell in there. Those guys just do not care.
Yeah.
I mean, we try and straighten and keep it clean as best we can, but ultimately, when they're in there and they're running 20 lines, you can ask them to do something, but it doesn't mean they're going to do it. So,
I'm in the union. I ain't doing nothing.
It is what it
is. I'll tell you one thing they used to do in New York City real quick is New York City, you know, the buildings weren't built to handle the amount of people that were in there. I mean, I'm talking about phone lines, all right? So they didn't have enough phone lines. So what they would do is instead of having to run a whole new run or however many wires they need to send up to the whatever, the 10th, 20th floor, who knows, they would just, you know, somebody needs DSL back in the day. All right, let's unplug this wire here. And we'll plug it into our DSL circuit over here. And then on the other end up on the top, we'll just take that corresponding line, unplug it from, you know, the junction box that goes to this guy's office. And now we're using that wire for their customer's office. So their job is done. And then obviously the same day, someone's going to call Verizon saying, hey, my phone line doesn't work, you know, and okay, we'll send someone out. And then they would just steal someone else's line and, you know, round and round.
Rinse and repeat until they quit getting calls.
Yeah, pretty much. Sense. But yeah, they didn't care at all, man. Anyway.
That makes me think of like everybody's done this. You're in a pinch. You need an extra port. So you just cut the end off the Cat 5 and you take 4 wires. You go this way. You take the other 4 wires. You go that way. Everybody's done that.
But honestly, that doesn't really affect. I mean, I haven't seen it negatively affect anything, really.
It will negatively affect gigabit connections.
Yes. Well, back in the day, we had 100 megabits, so it didn't matter. Or PoE devices. You're totally fucking someone's stuff up.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
No, No, Greg. That's wrong, Greg.
Sometimes you do. Sometimes you do. Man, I don't know.
Tell us about your pickleball stuff. What did you have to do? You had to take the midget and use him as a racket at some point? What?
Hey, man. Dude, I jacked up some 70-year-old people today. I don't know what you're talking about. Dude,
you don't
put
want
the...
to brag about that. You don't want to brag about 70-year-olds. On my bike team, the 70-year-old guys are the fast ones. All right? They jack us up.
I had this guy. He's a really nice guy. He said, how is it that you haven't been playing very long and yet you're already progressed way past my abilities? And I said, for one thing, I stuck my hand up in the air. I said, I'm about a foot longer than you are. Because he's about 5'7". And I was like, dude, so I'm just that. He's like, yeah, but your technique is so much better. I was like, that's because I'm a foot closer to the ball, so I don't have to like work as hard, you know? I was like, shit, man, you know? Sometimes, I know that's not what you want to hear because it's not something you can change, but, you know, sometimes being a little bit longer makes a difference. Length matters. Shocking. You heard me say it right here. Length matters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, okay. Hell. We're at the hour mark. You guys want to put any closing thoughts in there, and we'll take the rest of this stuff and add it to next week's.
Sure. Go ahead, Mike. I'll throw in my stuff later. Let's see. All right, I'll go. Okay, so so I just wanted to tell everybody once again, please get your ham radio license. At least the technical class, which is the first class, there's three tiers to it, the technician, the general, and the amateur extra. So the technician class is basically going to teach you about all the wireless stuff that I think Ubiquiti might have a training course that they teach more of the in-depth kind of stuff, but I'll just tell you what they teach you in ham radio stuff. And by the way, ham radio classes are typically free. So I took a 2-day ham radio class and it was completely free. It only cost me $15 to take the test. And it's not hard, but I'm just going to pull out some of the chapters that you'll learn about.
Yeah, you don't want to get pregnant. Do you take that at like a Pearson VUE testing center, or do you do it like, where do you do that at?
Probably just some old guys meeting at like an Elks club or something like that.
Well, no, I meant the test. Like, what do you take?
Oh,
the
test?
Oh, they'll administer it and everything?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Radio, yeah, licensed ham radio people can administer the test or help out in the test. So you don't have to go to any specialized test center for that. And I mean, again, cool. I don't know if they offer it, but I do know that where I took it, and from what I've been told, it's typically free. Most of them are free. I've never seen one that was that you had to pay for. And you meet some really well seasoned guys that are in the industry from like the beginning, from like World War One, and they're
well seasoned. Is that a nice way of saying a grizzled old bastard?
Wrinkly guys. Yeah. Yeah, some of the guys are really, really smart.
That's cool.
And I've learned a lot from them. But just real quick, here's a couple of chapters in the ham radio book. The ARR.
Hopefully you're not reading them.
No, I'm not going to read them. Once upon a time.
Narrating.
So chapter 2 is radio signal fundamentals. Radio signals and waves. They teach you about waves. Teach you about modulation. Radio equipment basics. That's kind of boring. But, you know, modulation and stuff, that's really important in any wireless communications. And then chapter 7 here, I just highlighted a couple to talk about, just to tell you about, is working with the FCC. I think that's important. A lot of WISPs might want to know in what direction to go. You could always get a lawyer that'll do that for you. There's a couple in WISPA that'll help you. And also bans and privileges. So that's kind of cool. And that brings me to another point. So apparently some people, I guess you can't technically, legally buy the Microtik wireless devices that are international because it has all the channels unlocked, all the bands, all the channels, everything that they have unlocked. But if you're ham radio certified or you have your ham radio license, you can actually get the international one legally. Legally, Greg.
Not legally. Because,
yeah. And you can use those bands so long as they fall within your what bands you're allowed to use. So that's kind of nice. So I figured I'd just throw it there.
Yeah, and the technician allows you to use any ham band over like 30 megahertz, something like that.
Not any band, and there is no such thing as a ham band or any band. Ham is just, I don't even know why they call it that. Actually, I do know why, but there's some controversy on the origins of the word. But radio signals are radio signals, you know.
But you know, there are certain bands that are, you know, set aside in the FCC for, you know, amateur, yes, you know, yes, use. And I think a tech license lets you use anything over 30, because any of the amateur bands that there are over 30, because they're only like the complicated ones, I think, are, you know, once you get into long wavelengths, because you can disrupt global communications at that point.
Yeah, I could use 2 meter, 4 meter, 6 meter, 70 centimeter. In ham world, they you measure the wave by its oscillation. So how long it takes to oscillate one wave. We don't go by megahertz or gigahertz or this and that. They talk about the wavelength. But if we just type in ARRL band plan over here on Google Images, the first thing that shows up is the band plans. And let's see, we can see, oh, now I got to right click and this and that because Google changed their policy. So let's see. So for if you just go to the, just type in ARRL ham bands or band chart, it'll tell you exactly which licenses you're allowed to use which bands. And you could print this out. It's a really nice little diagram. You could print it out and take a look at it. But you'd be surprised some of the bands that you can use. Like here, 33 centimeter. Seems like you might be able to use that. Did I study this? Well, anyway, you could take a peek at that.
You know, it's funny. I thought about doing the ham radio license, and I think I might do it just for educational purposes. I don't think I would ever actually buy the gear.
Oh, and no, wait.
What's funny?
The next thing I was going to say is right here, this little radio right here. This is,
yeah,
this is a Baofeng. This is, I have 3 Baofengs. Each one costs $25. So when you say it's expensive, it's really not true at all. And this cheap little Baofeng, I've upgraded the antenna for like $15 on Amazon. But I can speak to all the way as far as 100 miles away without problem. Because when I go to like these astronomy sites, they are literally in the middle of nowhere. So for my wife to get in touch with me, she can't use a cell phone. She just picks up the radio. She doesn't know what to do. She just turns it on and she speaks to me. She uses my call sign, but I'll respond, and it's useful. It's very useful.
Yeah, I mean, here's the rub for me. I've seen JJ before, JJ Boyd. He's got this crazy, I mean, he does everything. You know, he's like super genius, yeah, or whatever, but he opened up
building his own SDR. I mean,
it's I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway, he opens up his phone, and he pulls up like an RDP session to his machine at home, and he's got his like ham radio set up to his computer, and he like keys up and like talks to somebody across the world. And I was thinking, you know, if I didn't have the internet, that would blow my mind. You know what I mean? That would be like this whole new world opening up for me. But like, that's what the internet did for me. Like all of a sudden I was instantly communicating with people everywhere else. And
so did you just say that since the internet exists, JJ's pointless?
No, the pursuit of ham radio for me feels pointless, other than informational, like for my education and stuff. Like I don't think I, you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't think I would get the gear and do all that stuff.
But that's a misconception. I'll just tell you really quickly, like digital. So in ham radio, there is the old school way of doing things and there's the new school way of doing things. So the old school way is just, you know, strictly analog and you're limited to your local area. Or if you have a strong enough antenna, like some people in my neighborhood have like 100-watt antennas, they can speak to people all the way in Japan if they wanted to, given that the atmosphere is doing the things that it needs to do to bounce, or what's called skip the frequencies off the ionosphere and the ocean. But anyway, now they have something called DMR. They've had it for a while, and DMR is just digitally modulated radio, and basically you can speak to all these repeaters. So when you have a ham radio, one radio might not be strong enough to reach another one. So you go through these repeaters. They're giant towers with really strong antennas, and you speak to the repeater, and the repeater takes your signal and repeats it, but over a much wider range area. Now, that could still be analog. So what they've done is now they've taken these repeaters and they've made them IP based. So now think about it. You can speak to anybody anywhere in the world that is on DMR. And here's the best part. DMR works exactly like a cell phone. You get a DMR ID. Think of that as your cell phone number, right? So you can call somebody on their DMR ID, similar to just a cell number. And it'll ring, it'll as long as their radio is on, you'll talk out their radio. And then you have these talk groups where you can have multiple people, kind of like what we're doing now on Skype. We have a group of people. So DMR is really where it's at. And the technology for DMR is exactly 100% the same as cell phones, because it uses time slots. So it's really interesting. It's not as old school as you think.
So this is basically hipster Skype. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think hipsters would use a big giant desktop radio with like tuner knobs and stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're sitting there with their typewriter. Yeah. And they're Starbucks, yeah. And then they're yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, but then, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, you've got, you know, there are amateur satellites, and there is amateur, you know, videos, you know, like, you know, TV services. Yes, and
totally.
And, you know, and it's not just low frequency stuff. You know, there's, you know, 2 gigahertz, 3, 5, 10, 24, 47, 70, you know, 120, 140 gigahertz, you know. There's all kinds of space for you to do whatever it is you want to do. And
sure, but keep in mind, you don't need, just because you have a higher gigahertz doesn't mean you can do more. You could transmit TV over 400 megahertz, and people do it. Baby monitors are on like 400 megahertz or 100 megahertz, and they work fine.
It's just, you know, different, you know, different bands have different propagation characteristics and interference levels and things like that. So,
and by the way, one of the guys from our group, Ham Radio Group, he goes around to schools. He files paperwork with NASA months in advance, and NASA has a whole bunch of questions they have, because if you want to speak to the International Space Station on ham radio, you have to schedule that time with NASA, and they will give you the time slot. So they actually do that. And it's funny, you get at best, because of the speed of the International Space Station, you get about 12 minutes of talk time at best, depending on how far over the horizon they are. You know, if they're going 90 degrees straight overhead, you're going to get 12 minutes. If they're just over the horizon, like 10, 12 degrees over the horizon, you'll get maybe like a minute or two of good transmission time. So, I mean, that's the fun part of ham radio, the DMR, talking to ISS. But the practical part is, like I said, when I'm going out to the middle of nowhere, which doesn't happen that often. I'm going to be going tonight to like some bumfuck place in Anza where there's no civilization and it's just a bunch of astronomers. And
one would say that most of LA has no civilization.
Oh,
shots fired. Booyah. From the guy who lives on a pig farm. But glass houses.
But if there's actually ever an earthquake or a severe catastrophe, a tsunami, you know, all those cell phone towers and all types of communications, they're all down. Our main types, internet and cell phone, those are immediately useless.
Yeah. So when you guys slide off into the ocean, I'll try and ham radio you from the sea bottom. We'll see how well it works.
I'll curse you out from ham radio. I'll be like, I'll property now. So that's all I wanted to say about that.
All right. Well, that was a quick 10 minutes. That was this is very short. Now you're diatribe. No, I'm just giving you trash, man. I'm just throwing shade your way. You're doing good, brother. So, Mikey, you got anything interesting? You ready to close this baby out?
No, I'm busy.
All right. So, Mike, if people... I don't know why I bother even saying this. If people want to get a hold of you on the internet, how do they do it?
I think last time was best. PayPal.
PayPal. All right. Well, give them your PayPal address then.
Mikey is
Mikey is facebook.com/thebrotherswift. So all the content. Yeah. It's enough. There's ones that pop up every now and then.
There's like two or three times a month. It's not me.
Yeah. So pretty much all of the content on there is Mike. So all of the questions, the comments, the instant responses, that's Mikey. So you can get him via there.
That did. So conversation back in May, I guess. Because various people message us. Most of the time it's legit, viewers of the show or, other tech people. So I get this message from Gina Sonza. It was a pretty Asian girl. So right away I'm like, okay, this is probably not legitimate. And I get a thumbs up.
Already.
That's all I got. So I said, hi. She says, hi. Like, most people ask us questions. Like, I have this microtech problem. Or, I want to sell you some, fiber to the home stuff. Like, what can we do for you? Want to find my friend. I said, are they stuck in a rib somewhere? I don't know. And in the conversation, rib, routing information.
Oh, Lord, have mercy. God.
Because obviously this is going not towards somebody who watches the show or anybody technical. It's somebody trying to scam us out of something. Click on their site or whatever, send them money. But that was the end of the conversation. Like, I went to a complete nerd question. Yeah. And she's like, I don't know.
Sometimes, you just a good thumbs up. You're doing a good job, Mikey. That's all it was. Good job, buddy. All right, Dave, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they do that?
Yeah, just send me an email, david@pennytone.com, or you can get me on ham radio at KM6QAG.
Nice. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm at gregsoul.com. I actually just dropped my 11th lynda.com LinkedIn learning course. It's the last one in the CCMP routing, and man, am I glad that stuff's over with. I just finished up two more CCNA courses. It's the CCNA, the tail end of the ICND. I got pulled in to close that one out. I wish I had gotten the whole thing, and I was fighting them to get the whole thing, but they were being too impatient. They gave the first little bit to somebody else, but whatever. I'm not bitter about it. I'm not salty. I let it go. Tom Smith always gives me trash because I never talk about that stuff. So there, I'm talking about it. I did it. I did the thing. I'd still do a little bit of consulting here, there. Hit me up. I do still blog occasionally. GregSoul.com. You can hit me at Greg@GregSoul.com. All that good stuff. If you want to become a patron, we have a Brothers Wisp only Slack group that Dave finally got his butt into. Maybe he'll get a little bit more active in there. But it's patreon.com/TheBrothersWisp. You can pop in there and become one of the little brothers wisps. Sometimes it's overwhelming. If I miss a day, it's like, Jesus, scroll. Sometimes it's TLDR, which is great because, it's a lot of good discourse, people asking questions, and a lot of answers coming back at them really quick, which I love. Such an open community. People are asking all kinds of stuff in there. It's really great. Sometimes there's crickets because nobody's worked on that sort of thing, but most of the time somebody's got an opinion or a suggestion, which is great.
Even if it's not applicable.
Yeah. It's, Mike's going to throw in, that's what she said, every now and then. you're Pat and Michael Scott stuff. But it's really good. Jump in there. Love to have you guys. Love to see the new faces. So, I guess that's it for us. Thank you guys. Questions, comments, please keep them coming. And until next time, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.